the volume.
What is going on, everybody? Happy Monday morning. For me, it's Sunday afternoon. Just watched, you know, football really for the last, 6 hours, yesterday all day, a long time. Consumed a lot of football, and we got a lot going on right now. Three and Out Podcast, make sure you subscribe. Make sure you send to your friends. Share, we're big in grassroots. Follow the volume on social media. Colin Coward, obviously you've heard of him. I'm John Middlecoff, and you guys know the drill. We'll dive into a bunch of stuff that I saw today, and something that I saw yesterday just is something that's not going to go away. And I actually was inspired to talk about it today because I saw a tweet from Coward, and it really got me thinking. But Middlecoff Mailbag at John Middlecoff is the Instagram. Slide up into those direct messages and get your question answered here on the show. Let's start with Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. And I think a lot of times we try to judge people on their finest moments. You know, most people, especially in pro sports, like, you can have a great season. Kyle Shanahan did a couple years ago. They went to the Super Bowl. Hell, they almost won the thing. But every other year with Kyle Shanahan has been a disaster. It was last year. It's currently one in his first 2 years. Now, you can make excuses about every one, but I've seen him when he's good. But for the most part, we have evidence it hasn't gone that well for whatever reason. Like, I talked about Mike Vrabel last week after the Sunday night game. All the guy does is win. Has he won a Super Bowl? No, he hasn't. But here's what I know with Mike Vrabel. When the season starts, I'm making the playoffs with that guy as my head coach. Whether I got Ryan Tannehill upright, whether Julio Jones on injury reserve, whether Derrick Henry's anywhere to be found, I don't know who their defensive backs are. It does not matter. They're going to be in the playoffs. And it looks like this year, they're going to compete to have the number one overall seed. Like, that's what I know with Mike Vrabel. Mike Tomlin, I know they tied today with Dan Campbell. But every year, I know what I'm getting. At worst, you know, 9 wins. More than likely, 10 or 11. With Bill Belichick, his lowest moment of his career, 2020. Think about this. Led the league in opt-outs. Had a quarterback who could not complete passes. You'd be like, oh my God, what happened to them? 4 wins? 3 wins? No, they went 7-9. Do you know what Kyle Shanahan would do to go 7-9 in his off years? A lot. And you see this year, and it looked a little weird at first because they lost some tight games, even though, you know, to Tampa, to Dallas, you know, they easily could have won both those games, or at least in Tampa, they were in position to win the game. Dallas, it went to overtime. But as the viral meme says, I think they got their swagger back. Belichick is not just the best coach in the league. He's the best coach in the history of football. And let's face it, football is a coaching league. You know, it's on a different plane than all the other sports. It always has been and always will be because schematics are implemented on every single play. And here's the other thing. What he's doing this year, he's doing it with a rookie quarterback. He's doing what he's always done. They have a good defense. They're always going to be good on special teams. They have a clear identity. They run the ball and they play defense. And then, like I've always said, the reason I want my young quarterbacks to play, because in life you learn by doing. Some of us, I guess, not me, but in academia, the theories and taking tests, I like getting out to the trenches. And I think football players do as well. It's why practice is important, and it's definitely why game experience is important. So the more and more Mac plays, the better and better he looks. And I'm someone who wasn't the biggest Mac Jones fan relative to be drafted really high. And I even think drafting him at 15 was pretty bold. But today was probably, at least from the eye test, I thought the best game as a pro. He made some just incredible throws. And we know they can run the ball. They shoved it right down the Browns' throat. Defensively, they've been fantastic. He goes, signs Judon. He's mixed right in. He drafts the guy in the second round from Alabama. This week, he was giving him praise. Their front seven is excellent. Then he's got DBs, you know, that just make plays on the ball. And the reason I loved him this game, Foxborough, that area, loves the Patriots. They're the biggest brand in one of the best sports cities in America. rightfully so, they've earned it over the last 20 years. Anyone from Boston will tell you they're always the number one story, especially even with Brady gone, as long as Belichick is still there. And so they're getting a home game against Baker who, listen, if I wanted to defend Baker, he was banged up. He had a messed up foot. He's got a sling on his arm. He's already, you know, not the most talented guy. And then he's probably playing at like 50, 60, most 70%. This had ass kicking written all over it. And the Patriots, two of their last three games, they've now won four games in a row, have been by blowouts. And the Charger game that was, I think, final score was 27-24. If you watch that game, it wasn't that close. The Patriots are playing as good a football as any team in the league, besides like the Titans. Like they're playing at a really, really high level. And like I said, in a coaching league, they have the best coach. They also have, is the guy a great head coach? Well, he wasn't his one shot. Did he do something messed up when he turned down Ballard and Indy last minute after he'd already committed? Yes. Fucked up situation. But Josh McDaniels as an offensive coordinator has proven he's really good. And today, he was hitting the Browns from all over. Left, right, up the middle, screens, draws, seam routes. I had no clue what was coming. I was just sitting on my couch, nursing a hangover. It's like Josh McDaniels is calling a hell of a game. And Stefanski's good. But Belichick and Josh McDaniels took him out behind the woodshed today. It was not a fair fight. It was varsity versus JV from a schematical standpoint. And the crowd was into it. And right now, the Pats, I mean, when you just look around the AFC, like, they're going to be heard from. They are not going away. Pittsburgh's in shambles. The Ravens just lost. The Titans, it's weird because their record's really good. But I think we watch them and go, are they really that good? The Patriots could be the Titans. You know, the Colts are coming back. You know, it's still very, the AFC West is up in the air. They're just, the AFC hasn't been this open probably in decades since the Belichick and Brady era really started. And I don't think the Patriots are some traditional power, right? Because they don't have a true outside threat. But the way they're playing, and no coach in league history, definitely of my lifetime, is better at adapting. They don't have a scheme. They do whatever it takes to win on any given week. So he will ask, like, N'Keal Harry, he's a boss. You watch him today, he's shoving dudes in the run game. He blocked Myles Garrett today, I think, on a touchdown pass. Or, I mean, a touchdown run. It was awesome. Might have been a screen. But, like, they found a way to use a guy. It's like most coaches, N'Keal Harry can't play, inactive. No, Belichick's like, well, he's big. He can block. Let's use him. And they are. You know? How many coaches would have that in the bag? Most people that I know, and I'd probably be guilty of this too if I was a GM, I'd just be like, just deactivate him. Bill's like, no. What does he do well? What coach he can block? Well, shit. We're a running team. Let's use them in the run game. And oh, they have. So the Patriots are coming. Another team, Dallas. I said last week, you can have a fantastic season. Obviously, we add the game now, so the records change. But historically, right, you went 12-4. Hell, 13-3. That 13-3 is an elite season. 12-4, upper echelon season. Anything like 14-2 and above is just fantastic. I actually ran into a guy at the bar last night. I was out and about in San Francisco, absolutely jammed. I mean, I talk a lot of crap about that city, but listen, you look on the internet, you would think it was like going under. It took me an hour to get in from the bridge and went out in the bars, like the happening spot. It was, you know, shoulder to shoulder, could not move, place was jammed. But I was talking to this guy who played football at Stanford in the mid 2000s, and his dad was actually on the Miami Dolphins team that went undefeated. He was showing me some pictures. You know, they still get together. His dad was like a special teams player. But the Mercury Morris, you know, teams will go 16-0. But you go 14-2, 15-2. Even if you go 14-2, you lose two games. But if you have a really good season, you go 12-4, you're going to have an awful loss. Potentially two. Like, ideally, you'd want all your losses to be like playoff teams, like on the road too. That's not how it works. You usually drop some dumb games. And the Cowboys did. They got drubbed by the Denver Broncos, who actually just lost to the Eagles, which was a little weird. But the NFL this year, as you're seeing, is pretty unpredictable. And I said, listen, you can't make that big a deal of that game. Like, I didn't make that big a deal on the Thursday night game to the Ravens losing to Miami. Short week. Lamar looked like he had heavy legs. Just a weird game. You're allowed to go this year, go 12-5 and lose probably three of those five losses. Could look bad. Ideally, it'd only be one or two, but it might be three. Not all your losses are going to come for playoff teams. It's clear the Cowboys have a ton of talent. Dak's an elite player. They have two good running backs. Their wide receivers are dominant. CeeDee Lamb is a star. Amari Cooper is just a lock every year right now for 90, 1,208. You know, Gallup's coming back. The Wilson guy is good. Jarwin's a good player. They are so dynamic on offense. So when it clicks, it's going to look like it did today. And they boat raced. I think the kids are saying dog walked. The Atlanta Falcons, who, let's face it, are pretenders. The Atlanta Falcons are not going to make the playoffs. Zero chance. And I'm not just saying that because of the day, but that's what a playoff, high-level team, a team that can compete to make the NFC Championship, like that's how good Dallas is. They should be in the mix to make the NFC Championship. And if you get to the Final Four, anything can happen. Right? You could argue anything could happen in the playoffs, but like once you get to the NFC Championship, to me, all four teams, you know, can win the Super Bowl. And, you know, I think Dallas is kind of trending that way. And their division is still, I know the football team beat Tampa today. The Eagles beat Denver. The Giants, probably, I think they had a bye. They did because I saw Jason Garrett at the Duke game. But Dallas is going to be fine. And they were always going to be fine. They have just too good of an offense. And as long as they keep winning, they're built to play inside. Let's face it, because of how much speed they have on offense. But if they have to play outside, they can slam the run. And, Amari's probably their best receiver, but CeeDee Lamb, you know, has the best chance probably. I don't even know. I mean, they're both pretty dominant players, but CeeDee Lamb can play outside. Hell, Amari can too. But they can run the ball if they have to with Zeke, who's a physical runner. I know his yards this year and just statistically doesn't look great, but he is still an absolute, you know, load to tackle. You think defenders are going to want to tackle him like late December when it's 20 degrees outside and snowing? I wouldn't. Pollard's a really good player. I'm still very, very bullish on Dallas. I had a lot of people like, Middlecoff, you said the Cam Newton, Middlecoff, you said the Cam Newton experiment was a PR stunt. That's what you said last week. I still believe that. Because if it wasn't a PR stunt, wouldn't they have signed him a long time ago? And I know that, you know, 5 minutes into the game, he had a rushing touchdown and a passing touchdown. He's always been a dominant player at the 1 or 2 yard line. He was able to do that last year for New England. He's the greatest goal line short yardage quarterback in the history of the league. There has never been a guy his size that has also possessed his athleticism. So if you wanted to give him a 1 yard play action pass, he could have done that in his sleep. He's been able to do that probably since he was 15 years old at the NFL level, even all season not working. But let's not act like they signed him because they thought he was some really good player. They could have done that weeks ago. They could have used him like they did today with Sam Darnold. They did it because everyone was shitting on them. They were playing terribly. And then Sam got hurt. And it was an easy one to throw out there when everyone was crushing them. This experiment with Joe Brady, who everyone thought, including myself, was going to be the star coordinator, it was not going well. And then they signed him, and I will give the coaching staff credit. They utilized him, what he's good at. Goal line runs and goal line little pop passes. And he hit two of them. But let's not act like he's not going to be their starting quarterback. Like, P.J. Walker is more productive as a passer than Cam Newton would be through the 20s to 20s. But he is an NFL player. But they knew that. The whole league knew that forever. But no one, now you can say it's bad scouting or, you know, coaches not being open-minded, whatever. But it's just a reality that they chose, you know, to not do this until it got really, really ugly. And they got a lot of, you know, good PR because they signed him. And then it worked, you know. But we'll see. I would bet against it. Now, if all they do is give him those plays, yeah, he is a valued asset in that position. I will never dispute that. The best short yardage quarterback in the history of the sport. Arguably one of the great short yardage players like Jerome Bettis, the Fridge, you know, in the history of the league. There's just never been, he's a one of one. But let's not act like they knew something that everyone else didn't, or they would have done it a long time ago.
All right, Monday night matchup. FanDuel Sportsbook's about to make it even bigger because FanDuel's given new customers 30-1 odds on either team to win. That means you can end the NFL week right by winning $150 on a $5 bet. Monday night football game. I'm going to take the Niners plus 3.5 and the under 50.5. I think with Robert Woods out, OBJ only a couple of practices in, I think they'll be a little clunky offensively. They have no depth at wide receiver. It's Van Jefferson, Cooper Kupp, OBJ, and a kid out of Notre Dame, a rookie. So they are perilously thin. It's still a strength, I think, when OBJ gets up and running, but I don't think he'll be ready Monday. I think the more desperate team is the 49ers. So I will take the Niners plus 3.5. Same game parlay. I'll take the under 50.5 for FanDuel. Listen, FanDuel Sportsbook is the number one rated sportsbook app in America. It's easy to use, safe, fast payouts. Plus, here's the thing. When you win, you get paid in as little as 24 hours. Sign up now, promo code Colin this week. You win $150 and a $5 bet. Remember to use the promo code Colin, C-O-L-A-N, so they know I sent you, exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. 21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, or West Virginia. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund $10. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Same game parlay available for multiple sports in all states on mobile/web. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Jersey, and Virginia. Or call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. Tennessee Red Line is 1-800-889-9789. Or go to 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona.
Well, let's get to the thing that I'm the hottest on. Because I thought yesterday on Saturday that we witnessed potentially, in my adult life, the worst loss in college football of the last 20 years. And some will say Appalachian State. I would imagine if you took Appalachian State from 2008 and you put them on the field with Kansas over the last decade, that team beats Kansas 9 out of 10 times. And that team at the time, Appalachian State, was, while they were in Division I AA and now they've moved up, was a Division I AA powerhouse. And I would say the next 12 years up until where we're sitting right now, it is aged to be a big-time program. Right? You know, like a Boise State, like not quite Boise State or like UCF, but a team that consistently wins 8 to 10 games. Kansas football, and I looked this up, one, they hadn't won a road Big 12 game in 13 years. Let me repeat that. The Kansas Jayhawks had not run a road Big 12 game in 13 seasons. I added up their wins over the last decade, over a 10-year span. They happen to have multiple winless seasons. They had won 20 games over 10 years. I'm not a mathematician. I'm just a California State School kid. While I do have a couple degrees, none of them from the UCs, but I can do some math. And that's averaging 2 wins a season. The Kansas Jayhawks have been easily the worst Power 5 program in the country for, you know, over the last decade. I don't even think there's much competition. The Texas Longhorns, who have been down over the last 5 or 6 years. They had multiple 5 and 7 seasons before Herman got there with Charlie Strong. Like, it's not like they've been some power. But to lose to the Kansas Jayhawks at Austin is the worst loss, not of the season, it easily is, in my lifetime. I would put that above Michigan and App State. And definitely that loss aged much better for Michigan than Kansas football ever will. Because Kansas football consistently sucks. And Texas and Sark, and Coward had a tweet today that really just, you know, perked my mind. He said that, you know, the thing with college football is everyone thinks everyone should be fired. And he used 3 names, Jim Harbaugh, Dan Mullen, and Steve Sarkisian. Here's the problem. When you use those 3 names, you are putting 2 people with 1 other person that has no business being in the group. Jim Harbaugh will win 10 games for his 4th time at the University of Michigan. All Jim Harbaugh did when he was in the NFL was win football games. As Bruce Feldman once told me, Jim Harbaugh's turnaround at Stanford is the greatest collegiate turnaround he's ever seen in his 3 decades of covering the sport. Dan Mullen went to Mississippi State. I think most would say it's the worst program in the SEC West. And consistently has been one of the worst programs beside Vanderbilt in all of the SEC. And consistently won. And at one point in time, he had them ranked in the top 5 in the country. Steve Sarkisian is a lifetime 7-win coach. That's what he does when he's the head coach. He averages 7 wins a season. And now he potentially at 4-6, and if you look at his schedule, it's K-State. I forget who his last game is, but it's definitely a losable game as well. It might be Baylor, and I think they already lost to Baylor. It's K-State and someone else. He could finish this season at 4-8, which would be the worst season in Texas football in over a couple decades. But even if he goes 5-7, Jimmy Sexton sold all of us, because when you go to Nick Saban, it goes, oh, this guy can resurrect his career. We are learning that Steve Sarkisian, and there's nothing wrong with this. Sometimes you have to look yourself in the mirror and just realize what you are. Now, I don't fault him for taking Texas's $30, $40 million. But if I tried to say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to Hollywood and I'm going to be a leading man. Hell, I'll even settle for the being the soaps, be daily soap operas. I'll be a leading man. I'm not good looking enough. I would never be able to pull that off. I'd be an idiot. Just do what you're doing. So now, granted, someone believed that Sark could be a leading man. Here's the problem. He 100% is not. We know what he is. He's a number two. Now, if he's a number two with Pete Carroll or Nick Saban, I don't know. Two of the greatest. I mean, Saban is the greatest college football coach ever. And Pete Carroll is going to go down for his run at USC as one of the greatest runs in college football history over that 7-8 year span. He's awesome. But when you put him by himself at Washington and then at SC, we know he was dragged out of a team meeting room for being intoxicated. But listen, I am someone who's, I don't care about that. I'm open to second chances. Hell, I've gotten second chances in life. I am not some moral high horse guy. People go, Middlecoff, do you have a vendetta towards Sark? Never met the guy. I don't care. I'm not emotional about this shit. Whenever someone gets mad at me, they're like, what's your vendetta? I don't know. I have no emotion. I just drink and bet and watch sports from my couch like you do. Hell, I root for, the only emotion I have are the people that I actually know. I root for them to succeed. But if I don't know you, I don't care. Like I'm not mad at Sark for taking the money. I'm just calling it what he is. A terrible head coach who just had the most embarrassing loss in the history. That's the worst loss in the history of Texas football. Definitely in my life. And I would imagine there is probably not many close comps. So you lose that game. Like Harbaugh couldn't beat Ohio State, but he was still winning 10 games. Dan Mullen won the SEC East last season. Dan Mullen played Nick Saban in the SEC championship game last fucking year. Steve Sarkisian would sell his left testicle to win 10 games a season. Both those two guys have done it. Steve Sarkisian can't win. I bet against Lane Kiffin yesterday, which is moronic. I don't know why I did it. I was out drinking with my buddy Brian Hawkins, who's a big A&M fan. I was feeling the juice. And it was stupid because Lane Kiffin took Jimbo Fisher, who's on like a $100 million contract, to the woodshed. Now, Jimbo's quarterback was messed up, but still, Lane kicked his ass. Here's what I know about Lane Kiffin now as a head coach. He's 2 wins away from winning 10 games. He plays Vanderbilt and then Mississippi State. He coaches at Ole Miss. At Ole Miss. He's going to win. But, you know, worst case scenario, Mississippi State beats him because Mike Leach, another guy who, I don't know, just wins. He goes 9-3. Lane Kiffin can win. Steve Sarkisian can't win. Now, he has a great, great media push and Jimmy Sexton working for him. It just does not work. It just doesn't. The evidence is in. He lost to Kansas. Not basketball, in football, at home. Like, I'm sorry. They're going to be powerful people around that program that are just never, ever going to be able to look at them the same. There are certain things that happen in a relationship. If you cheat on someone, I'm a big believer, there's no coming back once the other person finds out. And I'm sure maybe some people listening, you guys have reconciled. I'm sorry. It's just never the same. You don't shake that. You just don't. The other person, I couldn't. People that I know that have been in those situations don't. That to me is what losing to Kansas football is. You just don't shake that smell, that stink. Like, how do your bosses, how do the people in power, and you can question the people in power at Texas, it's a weird place, ever look at him the same? They don't. I think it's over before it even began. See you guys a little bit later. Subscribe to the podcast, 3 and Out, The Volume. Leave Middlecoff mailbag at John Middlecoff. And I'll talk to everyone later. Have a great week. See you tomorrow. Peace.
the volume.